I'm Justin Boyd.
And I'm Brittany Pacheco. And we're back. We are the Watchers in the Basement.
That's right, Brittany. We are back. And we are the Watchers in the Basement. Welcome to the Watchers in the Basement. Today, we are here to discuss X-Men. That's right. The first X-Men movie that came out in the year 2000. But before we get to our X-Men review and kind of, you know, reminiscing about that film, I wanted to kind of play catch up a little bit. Because, you know, if you're a fan of the Watchers, we apologize. We've been off for a little while. I know personally, I don't think I've done a show in like 2 months. So anyway, in the time that we've been away, a lot has happened. A lot has happened with the mutants. A lot has happened on the superhero front. So I'm going to do a quick little catch up right now. So as you probably all saw, the Deadpool and Wolverine teaser trailer dropped during the Super Bowl. Also that day, we learned the title of the movie because we were just calling it Deadpool 3. We learned the movie is actually called Deadpool and Wolverine. Brittany, quick thoughts on that trailer, if what you remember from that, and your excitement level for the movie.
Fantastic. That's all I got to say about that. Like, fantastic for who? Like, Deadpool and Wolverine, I think, is awesome. The trailer was amazing. That slow motion of Deadpool, like, reloading his guns was so cool. And then, not to mention, almost, like, 48 hours later, this kid somewhere who does like Lego animations of scenes, movie from movies, shows, what have you, did the whole freaking trailer in Legos and did that. Amazing. Totally amazing. The posters that have shown up on social media as a result of that trailer finally being released are amazing. You know, if y'all are watching this here on YouTube, I did the little hearts with your hands, and that's like part of the friendship bracelet thing, you know, that you have with Deadpool and Wolverine. Hugh Jackman too. I love how he just really plays it up as well. He's like, you know, friend. Like, no, I wouldn't say that. Like, their chemistry together online is incredible. I can't wait to see it in this movie.
Yeah, I think the best line in the trailer was Deadpool proclaiming himself as Marvel Jesus. So exactly. I'm ready. Yeah, I'm ready to worship come July 26th. So looking forward to that. Yeah.
Yep.
And then so that same week, which it turned out it was Valentine's Day, we learned the cast of the Fantastic Four. It was finally made official. The cast was released. We now know that you know, Pedro Pascal will play Mr. Fantastic, that Sue Storm will be played by Vanessa Kirby. Johnny Storm is played by, oh gosh, what's the actor's name? He's from Stranger Things, I believe.
He is from Stranger Things.
Yeah. I was spacing on his name. And then Evan Moss Bacharach from The Bear is going to be the Thing and the Fantastic Four. So
Yvonne Moss. No, Joseph Quinn.
Yeah. Evan Moss Bacharach. I'm familiar with him. Quinn, I'm not familiar with. But anyway, that dropped, which the poster, which we were you know, shown, shows, you know, the Fantastic Four looking like they're in the 60s. So my question to you, Brittany, do you think it's going to be kind of like Captain America, the First Avenger, where it's a movie that is set in a different time, and then at the very end of the movie, fast forward, the Fantastic Four is now part of the current MCU 2023, 2024, 2025, whatever the time period is in the current MCU. What do you think about that?
Given that we're now in an entirely new saga, we're in the multiverse saga, it's very likely. I don't know if also it's just to throw the audience off the scent of time period or not. It would be really interesting to see an adaptation of Fantastic Four in that time period and then somehow try to loop it into what's going on with the current MCU timeline and such. We know that there's been rumors about what Deadpool is going to do with his movie and the characters, and like kill off all the, you know, Sony Fox versions of these Marvel characters and then really bring it into the MCU. So, you know, who honestly knows at this point. It's definitely a conversation starter, and it definitely keeps you thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that like, it would make sense if the movie is set in the 60s, just because the Fantastic Four, they're Marvel's first family. They're the first Marvel characters that were created, I think, in the 60s or maybe the 50s, I believe. It would make sense if they were set in a, you know, older, you know, in a time period from decades ago.
Sure.
but we shall see about that. Moving on, also that same week in February, Madam Web came out and it bombed. It bombed hard. I actually had tickets to see it on the first day. However, I had I've had a back issue for several years, but I had a really bad problem with my back that week. And so I did not go see the movie because I thought that sitting in a theater for 2+ hours wouldn't be good for my back. I think I made the right call because the movie absolutely tanked. And yeah. I've since heard and read a lot about the movie. I feel like I've already seen the movie without seeing it. And it sounds like one of the worst superhero movies ever made.
Yeah.
You didn't see the movie either.
Nope.
Well,
not at all.
I mean, do you regret missing out on it?
Oh, absolutely not. I went to the movies recently, funny enough. We went to go watch Dune 2, which I'll leave my thoughts for that. Different pod, different day. But there were still popcorn containers for Madam Web still on display. So that to me, wow. Yeah, I mean, and that movie came out last month.
I didn't see that. See, at my theater, they didn't have any kind of popcorn containers for Madam Web, but they did have posters. So I took a couple little mini Madam Web posters just to have them. I still want to see the movie. I'm going to see it once it's like on video on demand. It's like an affordable like rental price. I'll watch it at that point. Also, if you're out there, I do believe that it will go to Netflix once it goes to streaming because Sony has a deal with Netflix. However, if you have the Netflix plan, the cheapest Netflix plan, new movies that aren't Netflix movies, you can't watch on that plan. So it's
Netflix screwing us
over. I'll get off my Netflix soapbox, but I'm not a Netflix fan in any way.
I have Netflix. I have the subscription where I probably can watch these movies like this. Yeah. I have no desire to watch this movie. Period. I don't particularly care for Dakota Johnson as an actor. I kudos to everyone who participated in this movie, you know, cast, crew, what have you. Good for y'all. However, it just, I just wasn't digging it. And the reception that it's gotten at this point, I mean, Sydney Sweeney, who I don't know how much of a role she had in the movie. I mean, she recently was on SNL, and in her monologue, she basically said, like, y'all certainly did not see me in Madam Web. And I'm like, oh my, that's not good at all. So it tanked. I think on Rotten Tomatoes, if I saw this correctly, it was ranked just a little bit higher than Morbius. And I'm like, whoa, like Morbius to me, not another movie I did not see in theaters, saw it on Netflix. It was fine. Like, I don't hate the movie. It's not great either, but like, it's fine. It's not it. So the idea that this movie ranks just a little bit higher, but I'm hearing, I think, even worse negative feedback than I did with Morbius is, I don't know. I don't get how people rate movies these days. Like it's very concerning.
Yeah, the tomato meter for Madam Web right now is at 12%. So that is not good.
Yeah,
as Amber said, she's heard nothing but bad things. Yeah, we've heard the same bad things.
I
want to watch it. I do think that the greatest sin that these movies, these Sony movies, they have a thing. It's called the SSU. It's the Spider-Man. It's the Sony Spider-Man universe, right?
Yeah.
These films. The problem is these movies don't have Spider-Man. And that is,
yes.
That is, you know, the fatal flaw. And maybe they don't have Spider-Man because of some kind of contractual reason with the MCU, or I don't know, but they need to have Spider-Man in these Spider-Man movies because he's the main character.
It's really strange because the production company that's putting on these movies owns the rights to Spider-Man even before like the whole MCU thing. So I don't understand how they couldn't have made this happen.
I think the problem is, given how No Way Home ended with Spider-Man, there's a lot of discussion between Sony and Marvel about how the character goes forward.
Sure.
And because there's two ways to do it. There's either, you know, the way, if you haven't seen No Way Home, the spoiler, but no one knows who Spider-Man is anymore. So he kind of goes back to being he's going to be a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. He's going to be,
Peter Parker.
He's back in New York, and I know that the MCU would like to build him back up as a street level hero with like Punisher and Daredevil as a part of that. Whereas because No Way Home made a lot of money with the multiverse stuff, and you brought back Tobey Maguire, you brought back Andrew Garfield, Sony would like to make another movie with those guys. But see, my thing is, why not just make movies with those Spider-Men and then culminate it with another movie with Tom Holland? Like, but in the meantime, they're thinking, well, we've got to make movies because we haven't figured out what the plan is with Marvel yet, but we've got these other characters and we're going to pump these movies out. But if they don't have, like, Madame Web is a Spider-Man adjacent villain, and if you don't have Spider-Man, people aren't going to care. So,
real quick in the chat from Amber, never heard of a movie try so hard to be a Spider-Man movie while at the same time trying not to be a Spider-Man movie.
Yeah. And what's interesting about Madame Web, again, I have not seen the movie, but I know so much about it. The movie takes place like in 2004 or five, I believe. So it doesn't, like, it makes it to where none of the three Spider-Men that we know could possibly be this universe's Spider-Man. So, and even in the movie, a Peter Parker is born, but he's never named. Like, they go out of their way to not name him. And they don't say Aunt May either, but we meet Uncle Ben. it sounds wacky, but anyway, maybe one day once it's available, we'll watch it and we'll do a quick review, but let's keep it moving. That same week in February, the trailer for X-Men 97 dropped. Now, X-Men 97 is the continuation of the OG animated X-Men series. It ran from 1992 to 1996. So 97 being the next year, they're going to continue it. They dropped the trailer. I thought the trailer looked amazing. And it actually airs next week as we're recording on March 13th. The first two episodes of X-Men 97 drop on March 20th. Brittany, what did you think about the trailer and what kind of memories do you have of the animated series?
Well, this kind of goes hand in hand. First of all, shout out to my brother, Mike. Today is his birthday. I will not reveal his name, but I have to mention my brother.
His age.
His name, his age. Listen to me. My bad.
His name's not Peter Parker. So you can say his name. It's okay. Yeah.
I'm also getting old too, y'all. So forgive me. But I mentioned my brother because of the fact that when X-Men back in the day was airing, this was something I used to watch with my brother all the time. Now, granted, I was like 3 to 7, 3 to 8, you know, when the show was airing. But he, funny enough, because I posted on my Snapchat that I was watching the original series on Disney Plus, which all y'all should go catch up and, you know, refamiliarize yourself if you haven't remembered everything like I have. He commented back saying like, oh my gosh, I remember watching this with you. You knew the commercial trailers by heart and you would be like, Jean Grey, no. So like this is like, it's really near and dear to my heart that this X-Men 97 is going to continue on that story from my childhood. Right. And the theme song is just totally iconic. Of course, you've heard me say it here on the Watchers in the Basement quite a few times. I apologize, but I'm also not sorry. So the trailer was really cool. I think to continue that story and just kind of leave you like, ooh, what's going to happen? And it's an animation. It's a 2D animation, which I absolutely love because once again, that's so nostalgic of my childhood. And, you know, these days it's always kind of like that 3D, you know, Pixar kind of look. And I'm just actually glad that they decided to keep it true to its roots and keep that same illustrated 2D animation.
I mean, updated a little bit though.
A little bit, yes, but it's still keeping true to the original animated series, which I absolutely love. Yes, Amber, we're a bunch of old farts. You'll get there one day too. So
I'm considerably older than Brittany though.
I did not say that. I did not say anything for once.
I just want to
remind everyone. But yeah, no, the trailer looked great. The little Easter eggs that you had actually pointed out, Justin, especially with the newspaper, that I did not catch on the first watch, I think is really cool. So it makes you wonder too, like how much is this going to incorporate maybe some other characters or some other like spinoff type things? Like it's really interesting and I'm looking forward to it. Definitely.
Well, you know, in the original, you know, the first run of the series, there are other heroes in the Marvel universe that appear: Spider-Man, Captain America, you know, Carol Danvers as Miss Marvel, not as Captain Marvel.
Not as Captain, right.
So there's a lot, and there may be others. I'm actually working my way through the series. I'm like halfway through, because I watched it as a kid, but like I said, it's a little bit older than you were. So like I would watch it, but I wasn't like, no, I was a kid. It was like, I was 12, 13 when it came out. So like I watched
teenager,
it.
Sir, that's not a kid.
Right. Well, I watched it. I didn't watch it. I don't watch every episode, but I am watching every episode now. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that series.
Yep.
And speaking of that series, which again debuts on March 20th, just next week, just yesterday, the creator slash showrunner slash writer for not only this animated series, but this person wrote for the Blade movie that's still in development, also wrote some episodes for Moon Knight.
Yep.
A person by the name of Bo DiMaio. He was fired by Marvel yesterday, or we learned about it yesterday.
Yeah.
Again, the series debuts next week, and apparently he was working on a third season of this X-Men 97. So potentially they have two in the can, at least one we know in the can. So
for sure,
very shocking news that they would fire the creator slash showrunner a week before it premieres. there's not a lot of details out there that I've seen, so
no. You know,
we could speculate, but doesn't do any good. But Brittany, what do you think when you hear that kind of news? It's pretty jarring, honestly.
It's a little concerning for sure, because this isn't the first sort of writer, showrunner, some sort of crew member from a well-established fandom that has been let go by Marvel and or Disney. So it's like, it makes you really wonder what really is happening behind the scenes with these bigwigs, and why are talented individuals being let go? So, I mean, especially if he's got a hand in Blade, which, you know, still hasn't really been worked on yet. And granted, yes, we had the writer strike, the actor strike, what have you, things, you know, obviously fell behind, but it's a little concerning. It's a little concerning because how much will these franchises or what have you may suffer because you're letting go of people who are so invested in it. Right. And yes, you might find a replacement who can complete the work and what have you, but like, but at what cost? We've always said here, at least between Justin and I, that when Disney Plus came about, and yes, the pandemic happened almost on the heels of the Disney Plus release, having to provide content for not only movie theater releases, but streaming platform has been really, I think, hurting these teams.
It's hurt the MCU. Yeah.
It's hurt the MCU greatly, and I think, you know, we're no stranger to to having to pick up the work of, you know, three people that you know, you're not going to replace them. But you know, this is on a different level. You know, when entertainment is at stake, people are going to voice their opinions, and they're not going to be shy about it.
No, I will say that I agree with what you said. But I will say, like, with this, it's not that what's great about this series, it's not an MCU product.
True.
And so it even had new branding. It's got the Marvel Animation branding behind it, and which there's going to be a Spider-Man animated series we've talked about for a couple of years now that is going to be called Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. It's also going to be Marvel Animation, which to me means it won't be MCU related, which that makes more sense, because the original idea for this show was this is going to be, it was going to be called Spider-Man, the freshman years or freshman year or whatever. And, you know, it was supposed to be like, you know, Tom Holland's, like the origin of Tom Holland's Spider-Man in his freshman year. But now I think they've understood, they decided like, we'll just make a Spider-Man series that has nothing to do with the Spider-Man in the movies. So,
it's probably the smartest thing to do, because if you're going to do these, like what we saw with Echo, that it's the Marvel spotlight. That's, I mean, granted, she's maybe the exception. She's already been introduced into the MCU, but maybe, you know, she'll be the exception where her story and possible continuation will still impact the MCU, but with other characters and other stories will not. So you can have characters that are well known in the Marvel universe, but they're not going to be tied in directly to the MCU.
Yeah.
Well smart.
Said. Well said. Yeah. So our final news item before we get to the X-Men review is today we learned Sony dropped the title for Venom 3.
Oh, yeah.
So Venom 3 is going to be titled Venom: The Last Dance, which obviously they're drawing off of the Last Dance Netflix series based on Michael Jordan and the 90s Bulls. I got to say, Venom doesn't really make me think of Michael Jordan at all. Brittany, what do you think about the title calling it The Last Dance? I mean, obviously, meaning it's likely going to be the last Venom movie, or definitely Tom Hardy's last Venom movie. But what do you think about the title of the Venom film?
I was like, when did Venom ever dance? Like that, I took it in the literal sense, of course, yeah. But I'm being stupid. But The Last Dance, yeah, obviously there's some finality behind all of that, it seems. Who knows if, once again, Deadpool and killing off all these characters from the Sony, you know, Fox, 20th Century Fox, you know, just so everything can kind of be maybe redone for the MCU. You know, I kind of just take it with a grain of salt, really. I like the Venom movies fine. I will probably watch it eventually. Yeah. Probably not in its theatrical release, but it's like, okay. I mean, three movies seems about right. Again, another Spider-Man type character that has no.
But this connection. This one actually, the connection's not very strong. I mean,
it's not.
Tom Holland Spider-Man was seen in the post credit of Venom: Let There Be Carnage. So there
That's
was
true, kind
of, right? And then Venom appeared in No Way Home in a post credit. Remember?
True, but it's
so. Right.
Again, you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt. So, like, I don't really have expectations when it comes to these sort of movies anymore. So, if there's going to be like a guest appearance of Tom Holland or what have you, like, we were supposed to have Vulture and Morbius, and totally didn't get anything of that, really.
Well, no, he was.
Is what I'm saying. So, like, you know, they hype it up and then they don't really deliver. So, you know,
I mean, Venom, I think Venom's a little different because Venom can stand on its own. Venom is probably one of the more popular characters in the Spider-Man universe. I mean, obviously Spider-Man's the number one character, but Venom is like in the top few, you know. I would say Spider-Man, Peter Parker, Miles Morales, probably Venom is right there with those characters. So, and also the first Venom movie made a lot of money. It made like
it did.
800 and something million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like Tom Hardy as, Venom and Eddie Bauer. Listen to me.
Eddie Bauer.
Giving him label name right here. Eddie Brock. I liked him better. I definitely liked him better than seeing Topher Grace in the
I mean, it's a different time, but yeah.
Well, I know, but like I feel like Tom Hardy kind of fits it a little bit better than perhaps Topher Grace did, but whatever. Different times, different movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's different because that was they were trying to shoehorn another villain in a movie that
they were.
Didn't really need to have.
You know, yeah, they really didn't. So,
like Tom Hardy's villain.
Love him
as Venom. it'll be interesting to see what happens. Also, not only did they change did they give us the title, but they also moved up the release date. So originally it was going to come out November 8th. Now it's going to be released October 25th, which I think is smart because again, the first one came in October. It came out around Halloween. This one's going to be around Halloween time. So.
Yeah.
I think it'll do fairly well, or I think it'll do better than it would in November. So,
We'll
see how it goes. Okay. So that wraps up the catch up news portion of our program. And so here we go. Let's talk about X-Men. And Brittany, let me hit you with the X-Men facts.
Yep.
Released on July 4th, 2000. X-Men is the first of 13 X-Men related films that were produced by 20th Century Fox. 13. That's more than I thought. Yeah.
I've
seen them all. I think you've seen most of them, but
I've seen most of them. Yes.
Hopefully, like I said, we're going to start with this film. Hopefully we can kind of touch all the bases before Deadpool and Wolverine comes out. And obviously with the animated series return coming up next week, I've kind of coined the phrase that this is the year of the mutant. I'm probably not the person. I'm probably not the only person to say that, but for our purposes here on the Watchers of the Basement, this is the year of the mutant, and we're going to try to celebrate the mutants and all their characters this year as we ramp up to Deadpool and Wolverine, which I believe will be the highest grossing movie of the year. And it's certainly my most anticipated film of the year also. So back
you're
to
gonna
the
go,
fact,
you're going to go see it five times, aren't you?
I'll see it a couple times. I guarantee. Cause I know like the Deadpool movies are, some of my favorite superhero movies of all. I mean, some of my favorite movies ever. I love those movies. I think they're so funny.
They're so great. There's
stuff that I've rewatched those movies many, many times.
Yeah. And
there's always stuff that I see for the first time.
The first time. Yeah.
Kind of crack up. So
yeah,
I'm really looking forward to that film. So, so like I said, X-Men was the first of 13 20th Century Fox X-Men films. And also it's the first superhero movie of the 21st century, which I thought was pretty interesting. Given now, I don't think it's the first modern superhero movie. I think the first modern superhero movie in my mind was Batman 89, because Batman 89 was like the first superhero kind of blockbuster film. Now, Superman 78 was a spectacle, and it was like, you know, for what they did in that movie, it was incredible. Sure. But that was, I feel like Batman 89 kind of began the blockbuster era of movies. And I still think that movie still is kind of seen as like a modern day superhero film.
Yeah,
but
that.
X-Men 2000 is the first superhero movie of the 21st century, so that's pretty cool. It's the third theatrical movie that Marvel released. Now, Brittany, I'm gonna give you one of the movies that came out before this movie. That was Blade in 1998. So Blade was the second one. What do you think was the first Marvel theatrical movie?
Ooh, you might have me stymied. I have no
idea. I'm gonna tell you that I did not know. I mean, I know this movie, but this one, I would not have guessed this one if you asked me. The answer is Howard the Duck.
Oh God, that god awful movie. Jesus.
In 1986, it was the first Marvel movie that reached theaters. So that's,
I have sadly seen that movie far more than I've ever needed to.
Yeah. That is just weird trivia. That would be the, like, you know, like for DC, it's like Superman. It's like, that makes sense. But for Marvel, it's Howard the Duck.
How did y'all land on that one of all freaking heroes to do a movie on? You land on that Marvel character.
Honestly, it's a character that I'm sure most people didn't even know was Marvel. Like, I didn't even know it was Marvel until.
No, I knew it was Marvel. But again, it's just one of those things that you don't want to remember, because that movie is just so terrible. Like, I remember watching it years ago at my sister's house one very early morning and might have been partaking in beverages, but I'm like, why are we watching this? Like, just why? Okay, so Howard the Duck, then Blade,
right?
X-Men. Then let's talk about X-Men. I don't want to talk about Howard the Duck.
Yeah. Back to X-Men. A budget of $75 million. The movie made $296 million at the box office. Runtime of 1 hour 45 minutes. I really like the runtime. I think it is kind of the perfect runtime for a superhero movie, because it kind of leaves you want more. Like, you get just enough, and it kind of leaves you want a little bit more.
Yeah.
So 1 hour 45, I really enjoyed the rewatch of that with that also. Directed by Bryan Singer, who, I mean, he put his stamp on the X-Men 20th Century franchise. He also directed X2. He co-wrote and co-produced X-Men First Class. He directed X-Men Days of Future Past, and he directed X-Men Apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
Also worth noting, he did Superman Returns. That's why he didn't do X-Men Last Stand, which is the third movie in this original trilogy.
Gotcha.
And Bryan Singer, he is a very controversial figure. He has a lot of allegations and maybe even, you know, some stuff that's been proven. Not a good dude from everything I've read. Also, maybe not the best director, because like Superman Returns wasn't very good either. And although X-Men, I thought was actually pretty good. So.
These are, I think more up his alley. Like,
maybe so.
I think this is definitely more of his niche.
Maybe
niche
so. Yeah.
Even though
he did not, he was not aware of these characters before he was, you know, asked to make this movie.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Kind of strange given how popular the X-Men were in the 80s and 90s. But
yeah, for sure.
Also in this movie, there was a little known associate producer named Kevin Feige. And I will I will talk more about his contributions to this film here in a little bit, but it's just worth noting. This is his first ever Marvel credit was X-Men. And then, of course, let's talk about the cast. Hugh Jackman, Patrick Stewart, Ian McKellen, Halle Berry, Famke Janssen, James Marsden, Bruce Davidson, Rebecca Romijn Stamos, Ray Park, and Anna Paquin. Brittany, let me ask you about the movie. Do you remember the first time you saw this movie? Did you see it in the theaters? If so, and what are your thoughts of the movie then? And what were your thoughts then? And what are they now after rewatching it?
I don't recall if I did see this in theaters, but I do remember we have the VHS of it. Oh, yes, wow. I said VHS. For those of you who are not from our generation and don't know what that is, it's basically a black rectangular DVD that you have to rewind. Look up the word rewind if you don't know what I'm talking about. Anyway, that being said, that's how I remember watching the movie at home with my parents, my brother, and I love the movie. I absolutely love the movie. I had no idea who, of course, these actors were at the time because, you know, I was only like 11 when this movie came out. And so that being said, I was just really blown away by how much like action and these really cool powers that these seemingly humans had. But you're learning they're, you know, mutants and how that has come to pass and what have you. And that opener. That opener that begins in 1944 Poland of the Holocaust. And that is such a powerful way to get this movie started and kind of establish like how real this journey really is, right? Like setting it in a period of the world's one of the world's most traumatic events in life, right? And then how the prejudice of what happened during the Holocaust is still continuing with prejudice towards mutants in modern day times. So it's really powerful. I think it was really well scripted and really well cast because I was reading, doing some research myself that Patrick Stewart was like pretty much the only choice at this point, or really a real strong contender to be Professor X. I know we've talked about a certain pop star who really wanted to be Professor X, and that's just hilarious. Right. But Patrick Stewart, when he was given a comic of X-Men, he looked at the cover and he's like, why am I on the cover of this comic book? Which is hilarious because he really embodies Professor Charles Xavier. So casting is phenomenal. Who would have ever known that Sir Ian McKellen would have been just so busy for the next 10 years of his life, you know, with doing the X-Men movies on top of doing Lord of the Rings, which was absolutely wild to me. So yeah, I love this movie. Even to this day, it's still one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah. You know, I don't remember seeing this movie the first time either. I don't think I saw it in theater. I know I saw X2 and I know I saw X-Men Last Stand because I've got some thoughts about X-Men Last Stand. I saw those both in the theaters.
Yeah,
I don't think I saw the first one. I don't remember the first time I saw it either. I probably saw it on VHS also, or I saw it on cable eventually, or I don't remember. I saw it before I saw X2. So however I saw it, whatever rental or whatever. But I remember thinking I thought it was pretty cool. I did think I was like, it's weird how like the cartoons are so colorful, and the characters
are so dark.
Like, they're all wearing black. It's like you know, Hollywood had this like obsession with. You know, because Batman was so huge that everyone wanted that the only way for the superheroes to be taken seriously is we have to make them all dark.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the way it works. So I mean, it is funny to see all these characters in, you know, because how I learned about these characters was the animated series, and then to see them in the film and they're all dressed in like black leather, you know, pretty much. The same outfit, as opposed to like the bright yellow costumes that you see in the animated series. But no, I really enjoyed the runtime of the film, and I really enjoyed the rewatch. I thought this movie was better rewatching it than I'd remembered it. And it's not a movie that, like you said, you've seen it many times. I don't think I've seen it. Like maybe I've only seen it twice ever. So, maybe three or four times ever. So
I've seen it multiple times,
yeah,
you know, throughout the years. And I think even this month alone, I've watched it three times.
Oh, wow. Wow. Big fan. Okay. Well, I'm glad I chose this movie. That's a good one.
Oh yeah. No, I've always liked the X-Men, you know, again, from my childhood to the live action, it's always, they've always been group that I've loved.
You're not alone. Like in the 1990s, like, The X-Men were the biggest comic book characters, like not just in the comics, obviously the animated series. I mean, the comics and the animated series paved the way for these movies. That's why they made all these movies, is because of, you know, how popular these characters were in the 90s and even, you know, like in the 80s also.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the most popular character is Wolverine. And let's talk about the casting. Hugh Jackman, he doesn't fit. I mean, now you can't imagine almost anybody else playing Wolverine. But because of his height, you know, Wolverine is the smaller guy. He's like kind of a like a fire hydrant. 5'3" Yeah.
5'3"
And, you know, Hugh Jackman's like 6'2" or 6'3". So it's, you know, it's
6'2".
It's definitely a different dimension that he brings to the character. I guess I meant that kind of as a joke, but I mean, honestly, now, like I said, I can't imagine anybody else playing that character. What'd you think about Hugh Jackman's portrayal as Logan / Wolverine?
I think you said it well. I can't imagine anyone else ever playing Wolverine, even though Hugh Jackman was a replacement to the original casted actor, and who only had to drop out because he was injured, I think, doing a stunt or something with Mission Impossible. Yeah. So with that being said, you know, Hugh Jackman, and I'm going to share what I know because I've heard it from the horse's mouth. Hugh Jackman had a show that he toured around. So John, my mom and I, we went to go see him, and he talked about his time on X-Men and how, you know, audition, he did great. You know, Russell Crowe even turned down the role and recommended Hugh Jackman.
Yep.
Hugh Jackman's really known for being on Broadway. He had never done like any action type movie thing at all, especially in Hollywood, because he was just well known in Australia. So for him to kind of make that transition from musicals to doing like an action movie and then not really knowing too much about Wolverine, X-Men, like he was researching about wolves. He didn't realize that a Wolverine was a completely different animal. So that being said, you know, he did well with the audition, but he actually almost got fired during filming because he just couldn't perform. Like they had problems with his performance and he just couldn't get it. And then it finally clicked one day where he was able to embody like the mindset that is Wolverine and the physicality of Wolverine and everything he had to do in order to look like Wolverine and to kind of have that really just constant angry sort of mindset is very it's very daunting. But if I'm not mistaken, Justin, he is the longest running actor to have played one character. And we're talking now well over, you know, 20 something years.
Certainly in the superhero realm he is.
In the superhero realm. Yeah. It's insane. Right. So, you know, kudos to Hugh Jackman for, you know, pulling through and giving us the performance of a lifetime and really just you know, blessing us with his presence, because oh Lord, that man is fine.
Well, yeah, you mentioned about how he struggled, you know, like you said, he was a replacement for the actor's name is Duray Scott, who not someone I'm that familiar with. And I think obviously, you know, had this guy, you know, he was originally cast as Wolverine, and you know, had he been able to play the character, then he'd probably be a household name, you know?
Yep.
But you're right. He did struggle. Hugh Jackman did. And I think part of that was because of Bryan Singer. He had a rule on set of no comic books. He didn't want the characters to know anything about he didn't want the actors to know anything about the characters. And he was very strict about how he wanted the movie to be in his artistic vision. He didn't want these outside. Well, I mentioned before, there was this little known associate producer named Kevin Feige. And one of Kevin Feige's biggest contributions to this film, which there are many, is he would sneak comic books, X-Men comic books, to the actors and specifically to Hugh Jackman. And he was like, hey, you need to like see what this guy does, like read this stuff, like this will help you embody the character. And Hugh Jackman did admit, like, listen, like him giving me those comic books and me reading that stuff before I went on set really kind of changed,
mindset.
his performance. Yeah. And it's like, to me, that's like a no duck. Like, of course you would want to like know about the character. Like,
why wouldn't you go to the source? That makes no sense. Like give these actors substance. Like they do research because they want to embody that character and embody it well. Like, why are you going to take away the source when it's there? And especially when the fan base already exists and they're obviously going to have expectations. And then you're just going to, you know, change it into your own image. It's like, oh, you are asking for this whole franchise to fail if that was going to be the mindset. So kudos to Kevin Feige for saying, F you. Right. I'm an intern, but I'm going to do whatever I want.
Yeah. So Kevin Feige, I'll just go ahead and tell you the story about Kevin Feige's involvement in the movie. So I learned this information from MCU, from the book MCU, The Reign of Marvel Studios, which we did a podcast about several months ago. I love that book. If you're out there, like, you should definitely check out the book. If you care about any of this stuff at all, you should check it out because it's got the entire history of Marvel on film and the origin of everything in that book. But so Kevin Feige, he worked for the producer of the film, Lauren Shuler Donner. You might go, Donner, that sounds familiar. Well, she's the wife of Richard Donner, who made the Superman, the movie, and Superman 2. So that's, that's how she was, how she became involved in the superhero world. So Kevin Feige was an intern for her. He was an assistant for her. And whenever, Lauren Shuler Donner, she, like I said, was a producer on the X-Men films. And so she would send her assistant to the, shoot to kind of like be her eyes and ears there. And while, on the set, Kevin Feige was like, just like, hey, like, we've got to make some changes here. This is not working. Like, and so, like I said, eventually, he was giving comic books to actors so they can learn their character better. And also, he was a huge advocate for casting Hugh Jackman. He saw Hugh Jackman and said, I think this guy can be the character. And he was also really big on making sure that Hugh Jackman had the high Wolverine hair, because originally they didn't want him to have the hair like that. And Kevin Feige kept saying, no. He's like, we got to make it higher. And they said, there's a part in the book where they talk about how he's with like a hairstylist, and the hairstylist is like losing her mind because she's like, I can't make it any higher. And he's like, it's got to be higher. Like, it's got to be like, it looks silly. He's like, but then you look in the comic books and it looks cool. And like, this is what people know these characters for. And if they don't look like the characters, people aren't going to care. And he was absolutely right. I mean, like, he nailed it. And like, he basically like gave notes to his boss, and then his boss kind of helped put those things in motion, but he was the guy making the calls. And so
he was instrumental to it. Right. All. Yeah.
And I think it's very interesting that less than 3 weeks after this movie was released, Kevin Feige officially started working for Marvel. So the Marvel people saw him and they said, we got to hire this guy for something. And then of course he would go on to become the architect of the MCU, which is the highest grossing franchise in movie history. He's currently the president of Marvel Studios. He's the chief creative officer for Marvel Entertainment, Marvel Comics, Marvel Television, and Marvel Animation. So, Kevin Feige, like, the birth of Kevin Feige started on this movie, and the birth of the MCU started right here. So this is why this movie is very important to me, given how much I love the MCU and I love the history of it. And this movie,
you're welcome, by the way.
Right. Yeah, you turned me on to this stuff, so thank you once again. But he was so instrumental in this movie, and then also, of course, he would become the kingmaker for the whole the whole cinematic universe. So I thought that like that had to be mentioned in talking about this movie was Kevin Feige's role. So Brittany, back to the cast. Yeah, they definitely nailed. I mean, honestly, I think they nailed it with all the castings. You mentioned Professor X, played by
Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, Patrick Stewart, and then of course you mentioned Magneto by Ian McKellen. Those are great casts. Sir Ian McKellen. Yeah. Then you get to Cyclops, James Marsden, which I thought he did a good job. Originally, though, Jim Caviezel was cast, but he backed out due to scheduling conflicts with the movie Frequency. So I thought that was kind of interesting. So Jean Grey was played by Famke Janssen, I think she's great in the movie also.
Oh, yeah.
But originally, the role was offered to Charlize Theron. So
I could definitely see Charlize being either her Dr. Jean Grey or Mystique. I definitely feel like she could do one or two of those roles and do it extremely well.
Yeah. And then Rogue was played by Anna Paquin. Mm-hmm. Originally it was offered to Rachel Lee Cook of the She's All That fame.
Love that movie.
And Rachel Lee Cook turned down the role, but she's since later admitted that she regretted turning down the role. And so,
There were a lot of people like in researching this for today's pod, there were a lot of like well-knowns who were considered for all of these main characters, of course. And the people that obviously were cast, I think just nailed it. Absolutely nailed it. Even with having Ray Parks, I mean, kudos to Ray Parks for finally having like a role where they're not dubbing his voice for once, and he's actually just like getting to be him on the screen and just kind of be silly. And Ray Parks plays Toad in this movie, by the way, y'all, in case you haven't figure that out. He's also more well known for being Darth Maul in Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace. So yeah.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
Yep. Halle Berry plays Storm. She's great. I do like how in this movie, you don't get all the X-Men. You get just a handful of them and you get a handful of villains. I think that was really smart not to overwhelm the audience with. Now, you know, later on we get all the characters and we get different versions of the characters, you know, throughout the time periods. But I think it was very smart to start with a small core. Like, you don't have Nightcrawler, you don't have Colossus in this movie. But you do have some really key fit, you know, obviously Wolverine, Cyclops, you know, Professor X, you got all the key, you know, Storm, Jean Grey, Rogue. Yeah.
You even have like the little hints of minor characters. Like, she's not recognized by name, or ever, her name's not said rather in the movie, but Jubilee from the animated series, makes cameos in the movies. You've got Iceman or Bobby in this case, who pairs up with Rogue. Now Rogue kind of takes more of the role of Jubilee in this adaptation, as opposed to like Rogue from the animated series, because of the rights that were owned dealing with Ms. Marvel and things like that. They kind of had to pivot with Rogue and her abilities, just to kind of like lessen them, I guess you could say. But you get a mention of Kitty, you get a mention of, or you see a mention of Pyro, who would later on play different characters or have bigger roles in upcoming movies. But yeah, you start with the core, like you said, and you run with it, and it worked. It honestly worked. And that's from both sides, you know, the X-Men side and then the Magneto side, right? So yeah, it was extremely well done.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. Let's get to some of our favorite scenes in the movie now. I'll start off with Wolverine's introduction as a character.
Yes.
It's a pretty strong introduction. What'd you think about just the first time you see Hugh Jackman as Wolverine? Because like,
he's shirtless.
like I said, now, you know, going back now, it's like you can't think of anybody who could play the character, but it's like, if you take yourself back to the year 2000, like, this is the first time we see this guy.
Yeah.
And he's just like, you know, fighting in this like dingy cage, you know, for money.
Yeah. I think Hugh, during his one-man show, he talked about he was like a 20-something, like a late 20-something year old, and being cast in his first major film and you know, lots riding on him, but like, he just kills it. He also does a lot of his own stunts in this movie. Some of the injuries that he incurred because of this sound awful. Like, for you men, my sympathies. So that being said, I literally cannot fathom anybody else being Wolverine. But having rewatched the movie just hours ago, listening to, and I say listening to, the fight scene, because that first connection of fist to fist, you hear like a metal pipe kind of clang. Oh, and that, you know, I never noticed it really as a kid, let alone a kid, but I've never really noticed how telling that sound is in order to describe Wolverine. The fact that the metal alloy that's all throughout his skeletal system, the adamantium, is so strong that it you know, vibrates and it makes that sound, because every time he's striking that guy in the cage match, it's just like clang, clang, you know, headbutt, you know, clang, and not a scratch on Wolverine whatsoever.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah, and you know, and when he does have a scratch or does get injured, he has that healing factor where he heals incredibly fast. So yeah.
Yeah. But the the claws coming out.
Yeah.
Just the first time you really see them coming out, you see the two outer ones full on, and then that middle one is slowly coming out of his knuckles. And it's just like, oh my God, that looks painful. Like, that looks painful. It makes you cringe. But you know, this movie is almost 24 years old. It still holds up.
Oh yeah.
Like the effects still hold up. It's crazy.
Yeah. Like I said, it's the first superhero movie of the 21st century. You're right. It does hold up.
Yeah.
And you're talking about the claws coming out. That's one of the most memorable moments from the movie
is
the first time Wolverine meets Rogue, and Rogue, you know, she sees the claws and she asks him, you know, does it hurt when they come out? And he says, every time. And if you think about that, like, think about how every time he has to use those claws, which is a lot, he's in pain.
He's in pain.
So
yeah,
it really adds an extra dimension to that character. You know, he's not just some like mindless badass who's just like, you know, killing or taking over because he has all these powers. He has these powers that hurt him while he's using, you know, like they hurt him just as much as he's, you know, possibly hurting his opponent. So,
but he never kills anyone in this movie. He actually never kills anyone in this movie. So if that's not very telling, then I don't know what is, because you're talking about a man who has, you know, no memory of his past. It's impossible to determine his age based on his mutation of being able to heal, you know, quickly. And then let alone just being able to survive this experimentation of adding adamantium to your whole skeletal system. Like that's incredible. Right. And because of that unknown story, and it keeps you guessing, and you, because you do see these flashbacks when either Jean Grey or Professor Xavier is trying to kind of tap into his mind. And so you see these really kind of horrifying scenes of the experimentation and what have you. You start becoming very invested in this character's origin story. Like what happened? Like what's going on? How did he get to be like this? And then also seeing how the mutation, quote unquote mutation, is used against him with Rogue and Magneto, right? Rogue disturbs him in the middle of the night. He's having bad dreams. He inadvertently stabs her without meaning to. And then because her powers are to, quote, borrow the other person's energy, right, she almost kills him because she's trying to heal herself. And then with Magneto, when you see their first encounter, he's able to stop Wolverine from attacking him because of that metal alloy. And I mean, Wolverine's powerful to a degree, but it's also his weakness with the adamantium. So it's just a great character's like development. It's so good. So good.
Yeah. No, these characters are they're well put together. You know, it's a reason why it's so popular in the comics, animated series, and in the movies. So, and stick with Wolverine. I thought the Wolverine versus Wolverine scene, because via Mystique, who, you know, can shapeshift and, you know, can look like anybody else.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool to have those two fight. And then meanwhile, you know, Jean Grey and Cyclops don't know which one to go after. And then, 'cause she can, you know, Mystique can also sound like the person too. So that's one of those highlight scenes that I remember really well.
Oh yeah.
What's another scene that you really enjoyed?
I think being able to see the school in general, like seeing these kids, like, I don't know why at a young age, and this was, you know, well before having seen the Harry Potter movies, because they would come out a couple years later,
right,
but having read the Harry Potter books and the idea of like a boarding school kind of thing always sounded cool to me. So to see like a school in America that, granted, it was for mutants, although it was for gifted students, it just looked really cool. It's a mansion, like they take classes and they use their powers and they're accepted by people and it like their own kind. It was just really cool. Like, so, again, I was 11 when this movie came out. So that side of it appealed to me. And it also seeing like the underground levels, like Cerebro, and seeing, you know, the suits, and seeing just a whole other world underneath the school was really, really cool. I think one other scene, I won't say it's one of my favorite scenes, but it really like freaked me out as a kid, was when Senator Kelly, who had come to the mansion because he, spoiler guys, had become a mutant by the hands of Magneto in his experimentation, he just literally turns into a puddle. And that just like grossed me out. Again, the effects of this movie from 2000 have held up, because
they held up. Yeah.
Rewatching it today, I was just like, oh God, like that's just creepy. That's just, and Storm is holding his hand while he just completely turns into a water puddle. It's like, ugh, gross.
Yeah. And I think it was smart to use Senator Kelly as a character, because he plays a pretty big part in the first two seasons of the animated series also. Yeah. So I think that was well done to like,
for sure,
know, let's take stuff that people know as we bring this to the silver screen. So that was a good move. Another scene that I really enjoy is the end, is the fight, the climax of the movie, the fight at the Statue of Liberty, which, you know, obviously, I mentioned Kevin Feige again, but that movie, like that, there's a reason why in Spider-Man No Way Home, there's a fight at the Statue of Liberty. And it's like they're calling back to X-Men 2000. So I really enjoyed seeing, like, you know, kind of in retrospect, like, because I just recently watched No Way Home again. And I was like, oh, okay, that's I see the connection to that.
So. That is very cool. Yeah. I mean, there's I thought Magneto's kind of lair was kind of cool.
Yeah.
The glass or plastic prison that Magneto is in at the very end.
Yeah.
Was kind of cool because you obviously can't have anything metal around Magneto because he's going to weaponize it and use it against you. Mm-hmm. Seeing even Ian McKellen for that first time, like, again, watching it this afternoon, and I'm like, oh my God, he looks like a baby compared to, you know, now, you know, 24 years as we'll do that to someone apparently, but seeing his exchange with Patrick Stewart and referring to each other as old friend. And it's just, I love their dialogue with one another. I love everything about the two sirs' performance. And I think having someone who is part of the LGBT community during that time, I mean, because even back in 2000, it was kind of like it was accepted, but it wasn't like widely accepted, I guess you could say.
Right.
So having Sir Ian McKellen, who is not only a respected actor, but he is very much of an advocate for the LGBT community, it still ties into what this movie is about. It, like, the prejudice of someone who's different, and whether, you know, people should be around someone who's different and what have you. I think, I don't know if that was like purposefully done, but like you look at it hindsight and it just makes sense. And it's just very well, very well thought out of.
Yeah, I think that's why Ian McKellen wanted to take part in the movie, because of like the message.
Because he initially said no.
Yeah.
He initially said no. Yeah. But yeah.
But I do think that's the idea. Yeah, that's that's kind of always been the idea behind the X-Men, is to, you know, to highlight the lives of people who are different, and to, you know, show that, you know, there are more people out there who are different than there are. You know, not everyone is the same. You know?
The norm, so, quote unquote. Yeah.
So it's
cool.
Yeah, I agree with you.
It's cool. I also kind of like how some of the lead actors are not actual Americans. You've got Hugh Jackman, who's Australian. You've got Anna Paquin, although I think she's, I don't know if she was born in New Zealand, but I know she was raised in New Zealand. You know, the two sirs are from from Scotland and the UK respectively. It's kind of cool that you've got non-Americans who are playing these incredible roles, and it's just like, we're getting upstage people. It's just great. I love it.
Something I like that they introduced in this movie also, this is also from the comics and from the animated series, is the love triangle between, you have Cyclops, Jean Grey, they're together, they're a couple. Then you throw in Wolverine, and like, you know, immediately he has chemistry with Jean Grey. And so he thinks he does. Yeah, he kind of does, but like, you're right. Like in this one, they start slow where she's not like, doesn't seem like she's like attracted to him as much, but
yeah,
he thinks she is.
Yeah.
And you have the line of like, you know, Wolverine tells Cyclops, he's like, are you going to tell me to stay away from your girl? And then later Cyclops says, he's like, yeah, so stay away from my girl. So I do like that, because that's a huge part of the animated series, which, like I said, I've been rewatching. And I think that was also, it's cool. Like, it really makes for, it's like, you're interested to see, where does this go in the future? You know, like, I think that's, they planted a lot of seeds in this movie that like would flourish and go on to, you know, grow to be a big part of the lore and, you know, everything for X-Men.
Let me tell you one thing too, because you mentioned the triangle, Cyclops. Yeah. Never saw his eyes in this movie, of course, right? Because the shades, which by the way, looked amazing. Oakley, you guys killed it with this movie. I think I read somewhere that James Marsden has like a lifetime supply of Oakleys because of this movie. And You know, the red shades are just really cool. However, never saw his eyes in this movie. I had like the biggest crush on him after watching this movie. Like Wolverine was cooler, what have you, but you know, I was 11. The facial hair was like, I was like, oh, that's like a little too much. But then you look at Cyclops and he's kind of like a pretty boy and what have you. I'm like, ooh, I like him. He looks cute. Like I like him. But anyway, yeah. Well, their banter was cool.
Right. No, it's great back and forth between those characters.
Yeah.
And you know, Cyclops, he's kind of like the leader. He's like the Boy Scout leader of the team. Wolverine is the, you know, the new the addition, bad boy. The badass. Yeah, the bad boy. So like it works out well in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I was going to say, if you're a big fan of James Marsden, you should definitely check out Jury Duty, which he was a part of last year. It's on Freevee. He was actually nominated for an Emmy for his work in that,
nice.
In that show. So
yeah, he's a great actor. And it's funny because watching him in later movies and then having rewatched X-Men throughout the years, I'm like, oh my God, like I start putting two and two together. I'm like, I've seen this person in this and this and this. I'm like, oh my God, like how did, again, I was 11. I didn't know any better. I wasn't as invested in entertainment like I am today, but it's just really funny to look back and think like, oh my God, this is like a really star-studded cast.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Maybe not at the time, with the exception of maybe the two sirs, but I think everyone's career since then has really taken off. Like,
but ideally that's how you build superhero franchises.
I know, but it's crazy.
You take someone who's young, who can grow into the role, who looks like the character. Or it's the case of like with Robert Downey Jr., you find someone who's famous, but who's kind of down on their luck. And, you know, then he becomes this like iconic character. Because like we've talked about this before, but if you think about it, like, you know, like Wolverine, Hugh Jackman's Wolverine. I think that Robert Downey Jr. is Tony Stark. And I think Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool are three characters that like, it's going to be really hard to see someone else playing those characters. And I think that there's other characters that you could say the same thing about, but I think those three, especially like whenever those three are cast, you're just like, wow, that's going to be weird because, you know, Superman, we've seen tons of people play Superman. We've seen tons of people, like anybody play Batman. Like you put a mask on, you can be Batman, right?
It's been done. But, we know. Yeah,
Spider-Man, we've seen three Spider-Men already.
It's been done.
There's an animated one, but these characters.
Apparently Incredible Hulk too. So
yeah, we've got multiple, three people played Hulk. But I think the three characters I mentioned, Iron Man, Deadpool, and Wolverine, because of the actors who portray those characters, it's really going to be hard in the future to see anybody else play those characters. And
hands down.
In the case of Wolverine, maybe no one will for a long time, because if Hugh Jackman, obviously he's back in Deadpool and Wolverine, who knows what the future holds. I think the movie's going to do very well. That's why we're excited to look back at these X-Men movies. Because of just the excitement of this upcoming movie. So I think those characters are going to be tough to replace.
Two things.
Yeah.
First and foremost, sidebar. Shout out to Robert Downey Jr., genius billionaire, philanthropist, playboy, Oscar winner.
There you go.
Bravo. Spectacular performance in Oppenheimer. Also, shout out to Cillian Murphy. I always want to say Murphy.
it's Cillian Murphy.
I meant to say, I always want to say Murray, but it's Murphy.
Okay.
So shout out to the two of them for, you know, winning their Oscars respectfully for Oppenheimer, as well as Christopher Nolan. And kind of on the subject of Christopher Nolan, because Tom Hardy has been in a Christopher Nolan movie, and Tom Hardy's also involved with Marvel already. Hugh Jackman has expressed that if there's anyone who could replace him to be Wolverine, he wanted to be Tom Hardy.
Oh, interesting.
So I'm curious now with the discussion of Venom Last Stand, you know, could this be a way to wipe out Tom Hardy as Venom, Eddie Brock, and he could maybe be Wolverine in a different, I'm throwing it out there, but hey, there's also been talk about Daniel Radcliffe being Wolverine. That rumor's been spiraling for a long years.
Time.
Yeah. So, I mean,
But
out of the horse's mouth, Hugh Jackman has said Tom Hardy.
Don't be surprised if you see Daniel Radcliffe in Deadpool and Wolverine.
I would not.
No, I'm serious.
So ready for it.
Yeah, I think they're
ready for it.
They're going to have a lot of cameos and a lot of silly
stuff.
They're
talking about Taylor Swift being in the movie. My God. We're not going to get off topic, but anyway.
Yeah, they're pulling out the stops for that. But
they really are.
No, I think with Tom Hardy maybe being Wolverine, I just don't really see it, because I think that once they do whatever they're going to do with Hugh Jackman's Wolverine and the Deadpool movies, I think they're going to reboot the X-Men, and they're going to go with a younger cast that they can build up. To me, that's the only thing that makes sense. Having said that, the Fantastic Four cast is not that way. I mean, granted, you do have, you know, three of the four cast members are relatively younger actors who haven't really been in, I mean,
too much.
Evan Moss Bacharach has been in some, I mean, Evan Moss Bacharach, he's in the Bear's, he's won an award for the Bear. He won an Emmy recently. But I don't think he has the name recognition that obviously Pedro Pascal or, you know, Pedro Pascal also has, you know, he's like in his mid-40s, I believe. So he's not a younger actor.
Internet
either.
Daddy.
Oh, yeah. Right. So I don't know. I don't see Tom Hardy, like, he played Bane, he played Venom. I think his superhero like dance card is kind of full. I think he's probably done. And also, the movie's called Venom the Last Dance. So
there's been talk of perhaps Jason Momoa, you know, no longer being Aquaman with this, you know, James Gunn new version, and he could be Lobo. I mean, like, you just don't know. You just don't know. So
yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with
but we digress.
Yes, we do. You know, honestly, Brittany, one thing about this movie, X-Men from 2000, is like, after watching it, I'm actually looking forward to rewatching the other movies.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like I said, there's 13 of these movies. We hope to talk about all of them, but we'll talk about as many as we can. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm actually looking forward to watching X2.
I like X2
from there. Yeah. And
I really like X2.
You know, like I said, I love the Deadpool movies. I really love Logan, part of the Wolverine trilogy. I think the Wolverine is actually pretty underrated too, from 2013.
Mm-hmm.
But the other movies are kind of hit or miss with me. I did not.
Which is the one that has Deadpool in it or Wade Wilson?
X-Men Origins Wolverine.
There we go.
That's the one.
Who is also Ryan Reynolds.
That's the one that was written by one of the Game of Thrones showrunners.
Oh, God.
Created, yeah.
Weiss or the other one? D.B. Weiss or?
Benny. I think it's Benioff.
Benioff. Okay.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. It's David Benioff. Yeah.
David Benioff. Okay.
I'm pretty sure David Benioff wrote that movie. Yeah.
Good grieving.
Which, it's not one of the better movies, but it's fun. It's fun because Deadpool's in it, even though it's like not the Deadpool that Ryan Reynolds would end up
playing.
And
that's the one that has Liev Schreiber as Sabretooth, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Good point.
I like Liev Schreiber.
Yeah, because in this movie, there's another actor playing Sabretooth. And in this movie, like, you know, they totally retconned the Sabretooth-Wolverine relationship.
They did. Yes, they did.
Because in this movie, Sabretooth and Wolverine meet for the first time. Whereas in the Origins film, X-Men Origins Wolverine, they're brothers. So it's
really strange.
It is funny to see how this universe like did not go the MCU way, where the MCU is interconnected and they're they try to keep things as clean as possible. This franchise, they're just like, whatever. Just like, let's keep making. And you know what? There's something to be said for that, of, you know, just going ahead and trying to make as much money you can with these movies and trying to tell a good story. Like, I don't hate it, but it is kind of like shocking, because, like, you know, you do the first X-Men trilogy, which is X-Men, X2, X-Men Last Stand. X-Men Last Stand comes out 2006. The next movie that comes out is X-Men Origins Wolverine 2009. Mm-hmm. And you're already like, you know, reboot, or, you know, you're changing the canon that you created.
You're retconning everything. Yeah.
Yeah. In just 9 years ago. So it's kind of interesting how.
And then it got worse, I feel, with First Class, because the stories, and I was just like, this is not matching up to anything from the first trilogy. So that just bothers the mess out of me. But we'll cross that bridge when we get there. I do hope we will continue talking about these movies, because I do love X-Men. As much as the storylines like bothered me in the later films, I still enjoy the movies. I do enjoy James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender playing like the younger versions of Professor X and Magneto. And it's just, you know, it was really fascinating to see them and what stories that they were telling there. And then you still get Wolverine. You still get Hugh Jackman in these movies, like cameos or actually a role in one of these movies. So, yeah, like
But they did something smart in this movie, in the first movie, where they mentioned that, like, you don't know how old he is because of his, because of the healing factor and because of the adamantium. You know, it's hard to like pinpoint an age for him. So that's why it makes sense that he can be in the movies with the older Xavier and he can be in the movies with the younger Xavier. And that like, that was actually a really like, I think it's probably just fortunate. Like it wasn't like a plan, but it worked out really well given and how much he played the character. Yeah.
And then the huge gap from the last time he was Wolverine in one movie to then you have Logan, like how many years have lapsed?
I think it's since 10 years. Then.
Right. But then that gives you that wiggle room to do Deadpool and Wolverine and make that make sense. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like it's really smart. It's been really, really smart how they've done his character at the very least and be able to have so many freaking movies and still incorporate him in it.
Yeah. And with the multiverse now you can do anything. So Deadpool and Wolverine will be. It's a multiverse movie. So,
yeah,
we are looking forward to that, but
very much so.
We've got a lot of stops on the road to that movie along the way that we hope to hit. So,
yeah,
Brittany, you have any final thoughts about X-Men before we get out of here?
It was a great kickoff to the whole franchise that is X-Men. It's near and dear in my heart. I absolutely love this movie just because it the same way like I love Iron Man because it kicked off that whole sort of franchise, and the casting alone has always been spot on. And whenever we come back to talk about X2, of course there's other characters that we'll get introduced to that have been slightly altered from like their comic versions and what have you, but yeah, this movie is I think great, and I think to set the sort of storyline that there's a war coming, you kick off the movie with a war that was already being had with you know the Holocaust and what have you, and just how history tends to repeat itself because of people who are different. And that's something that we can even still relate to today. So I think when you're able to be able to tell that story through a medium and it still impacts people to this day, 24 years later, is just great storytelling. And while Bryan Singer may not be a good person in real life, he nailed it with this movie, with these movies, especially with its first.
Yeah. Also with the big assist from Kevin Feige. I can't emphasize enough.
I know.
Kevin Feige, I think he saved the Marvel universe before he even like was able to build it, you know? So I will give credit where credit is due. I think a lot of credit is due to Kevin Feige. So.
And that's why we will continue to say here on the Watchers in the Basement, in Kevin Feige, we trust.
That is correct. So, I enjoyed the movie also. And so now you know what we thought about the film. We want to know what you think about it. And Brittany, how can people let us know what they thought about X-Men in our podcast?
So as we do a live every time we come here on YouTube, we encourage everyone to participate in our live chats, just as Amber did earlier today. We really appreciate her being here. And we encourage you all, if you're watching the replay, to also leave comments down below in our comment section. And don't forget to subscribe, like, and hit that notification bell. That way you know the next time we will go live here on YouTube. But there's more. There's more, people. So also follow us on our social media. That's Facebook, Twitter/X. X-Men. Yay! Look, I made that connection. I'm such a dork. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, as well as Threads. And the handle is @WatchersBasement. Also use the hashtag WatchersBasement to not only help grow our audience, but use that tag so that we can find it and reshare it on our platforms and, you know, have a discussion. Send us memes, send us things that you want us to check out, send us articles, send us whatever it is that you like that pertain to, you know, pop culture, things that we like, sports, movies, you know, whatever. And lastly, if you're not into the video podcast, we are available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify with audio podcasts. Just be sure to give us a 5-star rating after you follow us there.
That's right. We want the 5 stars. So
we
thank
do.
You, Brittany. Good.
Oh, I was just going to say, and we also, you know, gained a couple of subscribers here on YouTube. Yeah. We're very, very close to hitting 300 subscribers. So be sure once again to subscribe if you're new here. And just want to say thank you to those who have been with us on this journey for the last almost, what, 6 years? Almost 6 years,
I think, in April.
Almost 6 years. My goodness.
Yeah.
It's been a long time.
So, yeah, we appreciate everyone who subscribed. And I would just say, hey, if you've subscribed recently or if you were here from day one, tell a friend. You know, let your mom know, let your cousins know. Like,
let the X-Men know.
Yeah, maybe they should subscribe to our channel, too. So, anyway, thanks, Brittany. I appreciate it.
Yep.
So for Brittany, I'm Justin saying thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We will see you next time. Have a great rest of your day. Goodbye.